Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast to thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today to talk about American Honey, the movie that was selected by you fine folks during our ballot for the Film Stage Show Awards, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
And Bill Graham. And we are still coming down off of the high that was the Film Stage Show Awards. We had a number of options of what we could watch this week, but because, as we've said before, American release dates are bananas and time is limited, we decided to review American Honey, which had been voted on by all of you as something that we missed last year that you wanted us to see, and which is on VOD right now. So that seemed like a perfect idea. So we are going to talk about it, see what we thought about this movie. And before we get into that, let me remind everyone, you can follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show, find us on Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show, and give us a comment and a rating on iTunes to let us know how we're doing, and that also helps other people find this fine program that you're enjoying right now. And of course, if you have any essay length thoughts, I can't speak today, you can email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. Before we get into our primary review, let me remind everyone listening at home that we are brought to you by Mubi. Mubi is a streaming online cinema that allows for you to watch some of the best foreign and independent and all-around great films online. Every day, Mubi adds a new film to their service, and you have 30 days to watch that film before it disappears into the ether to be replaced by another wonderful film. We have, coming out tomorrow, from when we are recording this, which is Sunday, The Yakuza Papers. And it's the final chapter of a five-film series of Japanese gangster movies that Mubi is doing. And this is by Kenji Fukasaku, who directed Battle Royale. So you're definitely going to want to check this one out. If you apply to Mubi now, going to mubi.com/filmstage, you will be in that free 30-day trial. So that'll give you 30 days to watch The Yakuza Papers. We all grew to love Battle Royale in college when it was a forbidden film. So let's throw a little weight behind one of his other films, shall we? That's again mubi.com/filmstage, and you can get your free 30-day trial of the best online movie streaming service available. But now that we've gotten through all that, guys, are we ready to talk about American Honey?
Yes, sure. Indeed.
All right. There's varying levels of what sounds like enthusiasm. So let's do it. There is the trailer for American Honey.
Business opportunity. We go door to door, we sell magazines.
We explore like America, we party. Come with us.
Got anybody who's gonna miss you?
Not really. Okay, good. You're hired.
Yeah. I like to make money get turned. I like to make money get turned.
Is she okay?
Oh yeah, you just gotta keep bringing your prayers, darling.
All right, that is the trailer for American Honey, a film that made quite a bit of noise on the critical circuit last year, but that we just never quite got around to. So here we are to talk about it today. And this movie is by director Andrea Arnold, This is her first American-based film, coming off of a number of string of hits in the UK, and it stars Sasha Lane, Riley Keough, and Shia LaBeouf, if you can believe that. So, what is this movie about? Well, it's about a young woman who runs away from home to join a band of people who sell magazine subscriptions door to door all across this fine country of ours. So, let's
influenced
see.
By a true story as well. I believe it was a
an Atlantic.
I want to see. Oh, Atlantic. Okay.
Yeah, I believe. I know that I read a story about this in Atlantic. I believe that that is the story that influenced it. But yes, these people are real. This type of situation is a thing that occurs. In fact, you may be familiar with this from both Office Space and an episode of Bob's Burgers. So that is the particular business model we're working with. Let's see what we thought about it. I want to start with Michael Snydell.
Yeah, because I mean, honestly, when I first saw this, and I still quite like this movie, but I want to say up front that, like, as time went by, there's almost no other movie that last year I can say more that you're going to like this or you're going to fucking hate it. Like, this is just a movie that has such an identifiably garish and vulgar style. And it's dealing with so many different things that it should handle more sensitively and does not at all, in terms of the fact that, like, you know, in the vein of something like a Harmony Korine, for instance, you know, when he was doing films like Gummo or even a Larry Clark. Is that who I'm talking about? Who did Kids?
Kids, yeah.
This is a film that gets very close to kind of fetishizing poverty. And, you know, what I find interesting about it is I think that it's a flawed film, a sometimes obnoxious film. But I also found it thrillingly self-indulgent. It's shot in is it 265, guys? I'm sorry, I don't have the aspect ratio.
One and one third.
It's shot in letterbox. It's shot in like 4x6, right? Is that what
it's? It's 1/133.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything to any fucking person. So,
I'm
like,
sure
it's just shot in a square.
To this show understand sure. What ratios are.
Okay. Well, anyways, the point is that it is a very immediate film, and it's, you know, set in America, and it's this vision of Americana, but it's also extremely claustrophobic, and it's a movie that wants you to focus on these people that are often very annoying. And, you know, but what I find so interesting about it is the way that it elevates all of these obvious ideas, like, but without a sneer. So when, you know, when she is, you know, doing this really exaggerated version of, like, you know, of upper class and lower class and everything like that, like, it's still done with this intention to take it very seriously. I think part of the reason why a lot of people really don't like this movie is they see it as trying to glorify this adventure and this freedom and things. And I think it's a lot sadder and a lot more complicated and antagonistic towards itself than people like to give it credit for. Like, I speak specifically for the way that this movie is not interested in being clever, at all. There's many different moments See, this is the thing. This movie is like almost 3 hours, and it's incredibly difficult to talk about because it's just it's a mess. Like it's all over the place. You stick with some characters, leave, but it's not a clean. But that messiness is its main virtue and what makes it so interesting. Like there's just like all these little details I like in this, for instance. Like one of it is that there's this persistent soundtrack that keeps coming around of a lot of hip hop and a country, but like it's hip hop that's specifically like elevated into a lifestyle, like beyond like a milieu. Like it's them like taking the message of something like, you know, Kevin Gates and making it into like an existential goal or but that also comes in a place where the kids in this movie, like they're living in a world where owning something seems impossible. Like there's just a, I don't know, guys. You're either going to like or hate this movie. Like, there's not that much to say about it. Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm guessing at least one of us is going to hate this. Maybe both.
We already know.
Yeah, I know one of you hates this. But you said, yeah.
So just to tap into what we're talking about right now. Again, we're not advertised on by Slack, but we use Slack all the time. Go Slack. Last night, what I felt was a very long way into this movie, I texted my esteemed colleagues and said, "Guys, I fucking hate this movie." Now, what you'll all be like shocked to learn is that when I paused the movie to go get a drink, I still had 2 hours left.
What?
And I was very upset to learn that. I could have sworn that I was like,
welcome to my life. Welcome to my life with every movie that lasts over 2 hours.
Bill, this movie was an empathy like experiment for me, like with you, because I'm constantly saying like, no movie can be too long. Like if it's telling its story and doing its thing, like you can't just look at a movie's length and be like, oh no. You know, I went and saw Silence. I didn't have a problem with it. But I saw the time remaining and I just like wilted visibly.
I think this is like 10 minutes too long. I don't think it's that long.
10 minutes?
10 minutes. Don't think I don't care about length though. Like you guys, like, yeah, I just don't.
I don't care about length in an empirical sense, but as a resource, you have to use it well. And I don't think that this movie uses its time well, but we'll get to my further opinions. Michael, you were sort of wrapping up by saying that we might hate it.
Yeah, no, that's it. Like, that's cool that you guys want us to talk about this, but like, this is a movie that like, if you're on the internet, you know someone who loves this movie, and you know someone who thinks it's trash. Like, it's just like this style, there's no way that you can be in the middle on it. Like, it's just
okay.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, that's kind of reductive, but okay.
All right, well, no, Bill Graham, why don't you deductive this whole situation?
Wait, what?
Okay, don't worry, guys. I'll use some language that actually makes sense now. Okay, first off, I do want to mention that Ariel Holmes, she starred in Heaven Knows What a couple of years ago. I think it was 2014, if I'm not mistaken. She was the main character in that film. She also stars, she's a very side character. She plays this kind of introvert named Pagan in the film. But I was just really happy to see her in the movie. I was wondering where she was, and lo and behold, here she is. But so Michael is kind of right. This film is tough to kind of break open and discuss, really, because it is a long winding tale that doesn't really take a lot of twists and turns. The main antagonist I guess, is Riley Keogh, who plays the leader of this kind of band of misfits that all kind of come together and try to sell magazines. But really what they're doing is they're just trying to move from city to city, have experiences. They all share like a couple of hotel rooms. They split up into boys and girls. And so her kind of golden rule is not to have, you know, girls in the guys' room and guys in the girls' room, and, you know, kind of keep it low key. If you mess around outside of their, you know, direct kind of supervision, but not even that. They're a bunch of 20 and 18 year old teenagers just kind of living it up on the road. This reminds me a lot. I've had a couple of friends that actually did the band tour thing, and, you know, they would go from city to city, living in a van, kind of bouncing from place to place, playing paid gigs and then coming back. And it reminds me a lot of kind of their adventures. I would see pictures from them on the road and things like that, and kind of hear stories when they would get back. And it's just kind of a time. These kids don't seem to have any real goal or real purpose besides just kind of living from day to day. And I really enjoyed that kind of aspect of the film. It's shot in a way that you could tell they were using a lot of handheld footage. There's not a lot of still shots and things like that. But even then, it manages to show off the locales that they visit. At one point, they're all peeing on the side of the road, and it pans over and you realize they're peeing on the side of the road, but it just happens to be this giant chasm that kind of reminded me of a smaller Grand Canyon. And it's just like, that's, to me, that's kind of the summation of this entire film, is it's at once trash and it's at once beautiful all at the same time.
Bill, are you sure that isn't the actual Grand Canyon?
I don't know.
It's been 6 months, so I don't know. But
no, it's looking a little
Grand
small.
Grand Canyon from postcards, but it is possible that it is like one, because the Grand Canyon is huge. Like, it's not one by one area, but I mean it could. It's a gorge. It's definitely something that could be like a tributary of the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean it definitely seems like it's leading that way, no matter what. Yeah, Bill. I'm sorry. Exactly. Continue.
Sure. No. But this film is not 3 hours, as my colleagues led me to believe. It is actually 2 hours and 47 minutes, somewhere around there.
Oh, sorry, Bill. Oh, my heart.
I was delighted. I was delighted when I woke up this morning to watch it. I was like, yes, it's not 3 hours. All right. You don't realize how much 13 minutes means to my life right now. I really enjoyed the road trip aspect. I think at the heart is Sasha Lane and Shia LaBeouf's love story. And I think this film, it reminded me a lot of Romeo and Juliet on the road. This is a very forbidden kind of relationship. They see each other from driving down the road and they spot each other, and immediately they kind of fall in love. Immediately they start flirting with each other. This is very much Romeo and Juliet road trip style.
I literally have no response to what you just said. That is,
I don't know if I agree with that one, Bill.
That's my take. Shut the fuck up.
Just in terms of like, oh, hey, I saw you and I'm in love with you now, but with nothing.
And
else,
it's
right?
And it's forbidden relationship.
Okay.
Whatever. Riley Keogh is not having any of that relationship. He is the band leader. What? What do you mean? What?
What do you mean she's not having any of that relationship?
The entire movie is about her sticking her nose in between the two of them, trying to make sure that they don't have a relationship.
Oh, okay. I see. So I thought, never mind what I thought. I was misinterpreting the word having in your statement.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Anyways, so
she's not putting up with it. Along. She's not accepting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not having any of it. That's.
Thank you.
That
okay.
Phrase means. Okay. Jeez. So, The film, what it does is it just kind of paints this really interesting picture of someone that's kind of scooped up and given this opportunity that she doesn't really know what to make of. The entire time she's kind of second guessing, and even under his kind of leadership, she still kind of rebuffs him. She still doesn't quite understand why she wants to do the things that she is supposed to do. And she rebels against it constantly. And it's a bit of – that's kind of the main drama, is her just not accepting her role in this – in this world that they've kind of built up.
Yeah.
Everybody else seems to kind of accept it because they understand that this is how we make money. This is how we live from place to place. And this is how this machine kind of operates. And she, the entire time, the entire film, it seems like she's rebelling against it. And yet still she's tagging along and she's still making ends kind of meet in a way.
She's like an agent of anarchy at a certain point.
Sure. And she is kind of rebelling against it. But I think what is kind of at the heart of this film is just seeing all of these different personalities and all of these different people get together, have a purpose, and go out and do it in the world. Whether you want to make fun of their kind of lifestyle choices and things like that, that's perfectly up to you, but I can't help but just look at these people and understand that these are people that, maybe didn't graduate high school or, even did, and maybe they lost their way, but at this point in their lives, they're living day to day, and, at a certain point, they are kind of living well enough to have adventures and do things like this. I don't necessarily see a way out for a lot of these people, which is unfortunate. And that's kind of the reality of a lot of these kind of gigs, is they are not meant to be long-term situations. They're meant to be short-term kind of pit stops. And I think the film, with its length, kind of explores that a little bit. I don't think anybody actually drops off in the film.
Nobody gets left behind.
Right towards the end, though, Bill, I think exactly what you're talking about, playing with that length, though, is you're spending so much time with these people, and then you're finding out, here are some new people. Like, this is just a cycle. Like as much as we get to know each of these individual people, like, any one of them is disposable at any moment.
Sure. I agree with that. But I really enjoyed the road trip aspect of it. I kind of gave myself over to it, and I made peace with the fact that it was a long movie, and I still enjoyed it for what it is. I really enjoy, like Michael was saying, the music aspect of it, because it is a lot of the music, a lot of the rap music nowadays is very aspirational. Or it's very goal oriented. A lot of rap music talks about getting money, having parties, and driving nice cars, flying overseas, doing all these lavish kind of things. And it is, in a way, kind of the dream for a lot of these kids, even if they don't quite know how to put A to B to C. It's still the goal. It's still, and music that kind of celebrates that, that's what they're into. And I just find this very much it's not even a millennial story. It's more of just kids left by the wayside and finding their own way. And, Riley Keough, give it up to her. She plays a great kind of villain in this film, I think. But she's also kind of an entrepreneur, and it's hard to kind of root against her, because at the same time, she is employing a lot of people by herself. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting to see her in that role. And yeah, I, I think Sasha Lane is definitely someone to watch out for. I loved her acting in the film, and I loved her rebelliousness. So I enjoyed it.
Oh my God. Wow. Bill, everything that you said is nightmarish to me. Because you seem to like be looking at this whole traveling sales thing as like a good thing. And it is like one of the most exploitative, dangerous possible things that a young person could do. It's these people are no better than indentured servants. They are handed drugs and alcohol to keep them working.
He called her a villain.
But he's like, you know, oh, it's a road trip and these people are having fun and like she's employing these people and that's something.
Okay.
But, like that you can't.
But I also,
I don't think you can say a single good thing about a single thing that happens in this movie.
Okay, well, let me ask you something, Brian. Okay. Did you hear the part about how that I didn't think that this was a long-term situation for a lot of these people, and I hope that this was a pit stop, and I hope that
yeah, but even
this
that's,
was...
that's like saying like, oh, 2 years of slavery, that's not bad. Like that's you, to my mind is literally
I don't
wrong.
Really see this as slavery.
I can't mount a proper defense because everything that you said with relation to the culture that these people are living in terms of its positive aspects, is just so wildly misjudged to me that
I just can't
like wrap my mind around it.
Well, Brian, I think there is something I would agree with you. As far as the main beats in this film, they're pretty horrifying for the most part, even to the point where like moments of so-called triumph like are immediately undercut by reality. But there is, I mean, I think there is still like, Bill, please tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but I think the road trip aspect is something that there is a sense of momentum and a sense of camaraderie and just emotion that builds being in the car with those people. And even though they're doing something, you know, deplorable, you know, in terms of how they're being treated and in terms of, you know, how they're just hustling, like there is still like a feeling to the movie that it's not, you know, it's not a it's not a tragedy first.
I'd agree with that.
Okay, well, it's not a tragedy first, which is good. It sidesteps things that would be thought of as like tragedy porn, which is a weird phrase but an apt one. But that's not
sure.
For this movie. Like, so yes, it is great that this isn't just a movie about the exploitation of people. Even though I'm pretty sure that you could very easily make a movie about this situation and have it be that. But
I think you could make an argument for this too, that it's exploitative at times as well. I think you can absolutely make it both ways on this movie.
That's the thing. Like, I don't, Mike, you brought up Larry Clark earlier, right?
Sure.
And I remember watching Kids a few times. I don't know why. That's one of the few movies that like I've watched more than once, even though after the first time I saw it, I said never again. And to anyone who's not familiar with Kids, it's about a bunch of teenagers in New York who are like stealing 40s and having lots of sex and doing lots of drugs. And that's a movie that witnesses these things and shows the kids having fun with them. And so you can feel what those people are feeling in that moment, but there's such an aesthetic choice and it's so keenly felt and observed that you can feel like the bent morality beneath everything without the movie having to underline it, to the point where I once watched this movie at a party with some friends because we're just really dumb. And a friend of ours said, "Man, that looks like so much fun." And we all just stared at him And we're like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, man, like, can you imagine if you're like 13 years old and you're like drinking and like getting high and just having lots of sex? And it's like, yeah, but it's not like, but that's the thing. It's like, there's a certain broken human who looks at that and doesn't see like the AIDS and the police and all the other bad things happening on the margins.
That's like saying Requiem for a Dream is aspirational.
Right. It's like, didn't you see how much fun they were having and how fucking cool it looked to get high and how much money they had? And it's like, yeah, but did you then see the part where the shoebox emptied out and he lost his arm? And I feel like this movie doesn't have enough marginalia of tragedy to be anything but kind of this flighty, over-aestheticized, just like travelogue of nonsense. And, you know,
Did you like Fish Tank then?
I didn't see Fish Tank, actually. That's on my list. I gotta check it out. But, I mean, you know, this movie begins with you know them dumpster diving, and they get a chicken, and she's in the house, and they're putting all this stuff that they got away, and this dirty child is like stabbing a week old, fully defrosted chicken with a fork, and like this redneck, I guess father or stepfather comes in and starts molesting her. And then she goes to, like, some shit-kicking honky-tonk to try to give her brother and sister back to her, like, awful mother. And it's just, like, overbearing with its level of poverty, like, horror. And then it jumps into this magazine world. And I don't think that the movie goes far enough in either direction. Like, it doesn't really make it seem like a fantasy fairy tale getaway land, and it also doesn't make it seem like just another hell. It kind of willfully turns a blind eye to everything that could be interesting or filled with drama, and instead it just follows this girl who has this really dumb, vapid romance with Shia LaBeouf, and he's awful, and she is awful, and everyone around them is awful. And, you know, when we talked about Hell or High Water, I said it was interesting how a filmmaker from the UK could come and do a heartland story of America that felt so true to life. And this feels like how that goes wrong. Like, this feels like the UK director who comes over and just makes a cartoon out of everything. And it's just not compelling, and it's not good. And I don't think that it dives enough into the psychology of its main character or any of the ancillary characters, or really taps into anything meaningful about these fucking magazine crews that are traveling around the country. And so it just becomes like this series of weirdly, beautifully shot moments and these situations that just like, they just get undercut by their own lack of drama or impact. It's just like a waste of 2 hours and 43 minutes of my life.
Well, I think the thing about it is Andrea Arnold doesn't really intervene with the insights you would suspect. Like, she is fine in having, you know, and just watching Sasha Lane saying something like, I am fucking America. Is that the line, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm fucking America.
I feel like fucking America. Yeah.
No, it feels like I am fucking America.
It feels like I'm fucking America.
Now, did she mean I am fucking America? Like I am and then fucking America, or that she is literally having sex with America, or does it
no matter? Sex with America.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that. That just happened. All right.
I just wanted to know if she was a embodiment of America or if she was having sexual relations with America.
No, she's fucking America.
You
because
think that she's getting
away with so much in her life right now. She just dumped two kids on a dumb mom that doesn't want to take responsibility for them.
Kids you never see again, who are probably now being prostituted.
Yeah. You know,
I think this film,
you're talking about the girl who says punk lyrics, right?
No. Her brother and sister.
Dead Kennedys. Oh, okay.
No, I don't think those are her brother and sister. I think those are kids that she got dumped on because of. I don't know. I don't know what that.
You don't think that's her brother and sister?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that woman is old enough to have an 18-year-old child.
I don't know.
That woman looked like she was a hard 20.
What? The one in the bar who was line dancing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, Bill. I don't know about that. She literally says that they're her kids.
They are her kids, yeah. The girl in the bar.
Right now.
The girl in the bar, those are her kids.
With the shitty eye makeup.
The girl in the bar, yes.
Right, and this woman is their older sister.
Yeah, I guess, maybe.
Okay, continue.
Guys, what the fuck was I saying?
I don't know.
You were talking about how
those kids probably were being prostituted out.
I was talking about how those kids were probably being prostituted out now that she left them alone.
All right. I'm going back to... Okay, you were saying that you don't think it goes deep enough. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andrea Arnold, like, just watches sometimes these dumb, vapid things. Like that, you know, line I just mentioned where she's in the car. And I somewhat agree with you, Prime, but I also find something interesting about the fact that she doesn't want to, like, impede her own perspective on these kids. Because I think that just watching them in this environment and seeing how they react to things, there are other examples, but the one that comes to me at the moment is when she's in the truck cab with the man and he's asking, you know, what's your dream? See, talking about this sounds dumb, but but I think that I like how her messaging the insights that she's trying to understand about this generation and about this world that they're born into don't come from the characters' voices. They come from seeing how they react to these situations and how, you know, for instance, the idea of owning something seems like an impossibility. How even the idea of, you know, as they're going to, you know, each motel and stuff, like the excitement at getting their own room and everything, like it's that combination of the, like, overload of experience and, like, the overload of experience in terms of trying to represent America, but also that underlying tragedy that you're talking about. But this, what? Like, this constant poverty and the way that they're living day to day, and it's those two combined that make that larger message. And I think that's admirable, even though it's not always as deep as I would like. But I don't think it doesn't exist.
I think it doesn't exist. It just doesn't. I mean, this movie, none of the people on this crew appear to have, like, a home life or a thing that they're working back towards. When in reality, most of the people on these crews are, like, separated from their families and are thousands of miles from home. And again, in danger of being left behind. And many of them die on the road. And you can't say that Andrea Arnold is just stepping out of the way to make way for this story when she has crafted this story so that these people have as little to risk as possible. And the one person who does have something to risk doesn't seem to give a shit about the kids that she left behind.
Wait, what do you mean? Why do you say there's no risk?
There's no. What are these people? What are these people away from? What are they working back towards? Like, they all are just aimless.
They don't have anything.
But that's the problem. That's the fucking problem. Is no, that in reality, like, these people do have things? Michael, can I speak?
Sorry.
In reality, these people do have things that they're working back towards. And you can't make a movie like this that gives you a reason to not give a shit about that just because you don't give your characters that. You can't have that happen. And then you have one character who should be trying to get back home to be with these children that she was obviously trying to help, but she's not. She's not trying to do a good job. She honestly is fucking up at every possible opportunity. And this movie allows her that. It allows everyone on the crew that, because it decided to not make any of them have any responsibility. These fucking magazine crews, they're people who are desperate, who are hoping for a better life. And this movie turns them into a fucking party bus.
Okay. So you're talking about... Where are you getting this information, Brian?
I told you, I read the article that this movie is based on.
Okay. So the only people on these magazine crews are people that have left a tough home life that are trying to work their way back? That's the only type of person on these magazine crews?
No, I'm not saying they're the only ones, but I'm saying to make this movie and not have a single character who reflects that reality, even on the margins, is dishonest. And then to force us to follow this one person who does have something that she should technically be working towards, who abandons it, is just disgusting. And I couldn't care about her because of that. And so adding in her asinine personality and her, like I said, her just disgusting, dumb, pointless romance with Shia LaBeouf that has this stupid conflict behind it because of a broad who wears a Confederate flag bikini and is just a nonsensical stereotype, constantly smoking, and all of this other stuff, it just is, it's infuriating. Like, this movie is infuriating to me because of the way it decides to use this and says nothing and does nothing. And at the end of the day, like, what is the point of it? It seems like it's just sitting there watching all of this happen in judgment, honestly, without ever trying to say anything important or meaningful.
Okay. And that's certainly a take on it. I think it does enough to where it leads the viewer to question a lot of the things that look so glorious about this kind of lifestyle. It doesn't exactly
like what
put it. What do you mean? Like
what does it
that's,
do to
that's
make
my
you
interpretation
that?
Of the film.
But you're saying that you think it does things that make you question this, like this road trip, this environment. What does it do?
Sure. So it paints the very clear picture that these kids are living from day to day. They don't have own anything, like Michael's been saying. So you can gather from that this is not a very fulfilling existence. This is a very hollow existence. And I think it does a good enough picture or painting of that kind of portrait of showing that these kids, yes, on the outside, they may be living it up in a certain way, but on the inside, they are not progressing forward in any real sense. You can see these kids in a year or so just fizzling out and not having anything to kind of have left over. But at a certain side, you know, you work at McDonald's for 40 hours a week and you're still in debt because you still have to pay rent and you still have to feed your kids and you still have to do all this other stuff and you're constantly digging a hole of debt. And
right, but
and just
can I say to that point, I mean, these people, when they don't sell magazines, they're not in debt because of rent. They actually owe money to the place that employs them.
I didn't get that.
That's what I'm saying. The movie doesn't tell you anything. The movie has this world and then just abandons some very honest realities of it while having of authenticity.
Okay, well, I didn't really get a sheen of authenticity this fucking movie because let me talk. Because obviously what you're coming in with is all of this reality. Brian, you are the shark expert in 1976 that is watching Jaws saying, this is bullshit, this is bullshit.
I am utterly sorry, but that is not fucking the same at all. Like, that's
I haven't read this magazine article, Brian.
That's why when you said, oh, like this party that they're doing and all this other stuff and it seems like they're having a good, like, it's crazy to me. Because you can't walk around and shoot the poverty that they're shooting and have lingering shots of dirty children playing with dogs on like highway medians and not be attempting to make it seem like you're doing a service or showing a middle American reality that doesn't get seen a lot. I mean, you don't have a scene of a girl getting molested by her stepfather. To compare this to fucking Jaws, Bill, really? This is a movie that appears to be trying to give a reflective look on a real socioeconomic situation that someone goes through and using that to tell the story of this girl and this guy and all this other stuff. But by allowing itself to strip away all of the harsher realities, none of these people ever seem in fear of losing their job or being left behind. It's just wrong to me, and I couldn't get away from that. Michael, were you gonna say something?
Well, I can see where you're coming from when you're talking about setting this film in this milieu. You have somewhat of a responsibility, or at least it's an injustice, as you're saying, to show these environments that aren't shown that often and glamorize them in a way without bringing in outside consequences. But I disagree that there aren't internal interpersonal consequences. Like, there are a number of characters within the van, for instance, who are absolutely worried about losing their job, and there are consequences when you don't make the money, as you see in one scene about halfway through, I believe. Brian, I can see what you're saying about, you know, when you're showing exactly as you're saying, like a dog on the side of the road, or these portrayals of this world that are ornamentation. Like, there is something to be said for that, but I don't know. I think Bill and me were looking past that and were into the characters I can't really give a defense for this milieu, but it's not authentic. And like,
okay, well,
this is also a British woman who is looking at America,
right,
and
which,
like,
is what I brought up earlier.
And it's like, that is a problem, but it's also really interesting to me for that exact reason. Like, that looking in this world that she's totally unfamiliar with, this is what she decided to make. And
well,
like,
for the sake of moving on, let's leave aside the wholly inauthentic story that wraps itself in the trappings of honest social observation, and let's talk about the characters. What do you like about the characters?
What do I like about the characters?
I just want to know. Like, tell me about the characters.
Oh, antagonistic Brian. This
I'm
is
not
fun.
Being antagonistic. I'm giving myself a chance to step away and cool down, and you can say what it was about the characters that made you enjoy them in this movie.
I like exactly that these characters are allowed to be terrible people, and that the movie still follows them and doesn't punish them. I like that, for instance, like her leaving behind, whether she's related to them or whether they're her mom or stepmom's kids or, you know, whosoever kids they are. I like that they leave them behind and she moves on. Like, I don't like these characters. That's not what I'm saying, but I find them engaging and I found them empathetic and I found the way that they talk to each other just engrossing. Just the way that the conversation moves, the way that the how Riley Keough conducts herself in each new city. Like, again, I'm not going to say these are good people. They're not.
I'm not telling you to tell me they're good people. I mean, I just want to know what you found interesting about them.
So I found the hierarchy within the group pretty interesting. I loved how when she first shows up on scene, she gets an introduction to who to follow, who not to follow. I love that. That Shia LaBeouf's character is kind of like the head honcho. He's the one that sells really well. And I love what he says about how the five rules of selling, just throw that shit out because it doesn't matter, because what it'll turn into is a script, and you don't want a script. You want to be able to kind of free flow with some of these people and connect to them. And I found what he says to each individual person. I love how he gets to know them. He is so goddamn friendly in this film, and he is so easy to just kind of get along with while he's trying to push these magazines. I think he becomes
intimate in like a single conversation.
Oh,
with
absolutely.
Any given person.
Yeah. I know those people. I used to be around those people. What they are, what was it called? It was a show called Leave It to Beaver. And there was a troublemaker kid that was always anytime he was around parents or grownups, he was the sweetest kid, but he was always getting up to trouble. And that is Shia LaBeouf's character. I've known those characters. I grew up with some of those kids. And yeah, you would see them talk to adults and they would be the most like gentlemanly, so friendly, so nice, so yes sir, no sir. And as soon as they would step away, they would just be up to no good. And I love that exploration of this character who has turned this into a sales tactic and is using this to push magazines at people. And I love that all of these people are like, yeah, but I don't really read. Like, it's so true. Nobody reads magazines anymore. And yet they're still selling them.
Unless you drive a cow car.
It's like the ultimate symbol of obsolescence, that this is how they're trying to make.
And I love what Shia LaBeouf is doing, is he's basically saying, no, it's not necessarily about the magazine that you're going to get. I don't care about selling you a magazine. I'm selling myself. And that's that observation in this film. And I think that's the beautiful thing about this film. You know, I connected to some of these characters so much. Whether, you know, specifically, I loved Shia LaBeouf's character. I love his interaction with it. And I love that she also defends him at times. When she sees that the woman snickers at him for going into politics, she's like, why is that funny?
Oh, my God. You know? I hated her in that scene.
I loved it. Because she doesn't know what the fuck she's doing. She is in that sequence. She is in that situation, not realizing that she's not supposed to turn, or she's supposed to turn that side of herself off. Like, she is constantly fighting this uphill battle that a lot of these people, they're specifically, I think the first assignment that she actually gets is she's dropped into this really nice upscale neighborhood, right? And everybody's like, ooh, ah. And she doesn't know that, or she has this kind of chip on her shoulder from where she's come from, her background, her history, and she doesn't know to turn that off. And so in that situation, and what does he do? He gets pissed off at her. He gets really, really upset with her. And, you know, it only goes so far, but at the same time, like, he is very much upset with her. and she screws over their selling opportunity. And I love that he, in the middle of this, Riley Keough realizes that she is fucking him up. Like, she can't have the two of them selling together because he's supposed to train her, but they can't kind of keep each other away from each other. And they're just kind of messing up the entire time because she doesn't have the ability to kind of hold her tongue. She doesn't have that ability yet. She hasn't either learned it or she is incapable of it. And so I find that dynamic so interesting because it is, in a way, kind of this love story where, yeah, love, you know, even if it's infatuation, even if it's surface level, in a way, love kind of fucks up your world and it'll disrupt so many things. Even the king of sales tactics, he can't have her around because she can't keep her mouth shut, you know? And I find that dynamic so interesting, and I find the fact that she's exploring that through these characters so interesting. So that's what I found interesting. Just and that's just having watched the film 30 minutes ago, and that's what I'm already pulling away from it. I haven't had enough time to kind of reflect on some of these characters, really, because that is the surface level that it kind of explores in a deeper sense. But I think there are some other characters in this film that certainly have some hidden depths and things like that that you could certainly explore with more reflection and more ability, maybe a second watch and things like that, to kind of clue in on what's going on in their life. I love that there are two gay guys in this film that are just happen to be gay, and it's like, cool, all right. And you know, I love that Riley Keough has this idea that, oh, separating the girls from the guys is actually going to do anything. More than likely, it drove those two guys to each other, and it's like, all right. Well, you done fucked up there.
Are you implying that because they were not able to see girls, those two men became gay?
I am not implying that. I am implying that more than likely they were able to explore their sexuality because of the fact that hooking up with a girl was kind of forbidden, and they were able to explore things that they wanted to experience with another man.
Okay. I just, they were given that opportunity that because I could, yeah, I could, no, feel the tweets coming at us.
No.
So.
Yeah. They were given fuel for that fire, I think. Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, the situation offered obviously them the freedom that they might not have if they were stuck at home to be able to find out who they were. I don't know. Like, my issues with
my observations.
I know, but I'm saying my issues with the concept of how this movie represents this whole circus, this you know, insanity is one thing. But then I have a similar issue with the characters, where I feel that they're pretty thinly drawn. I think that we learn everything we need to know about Riley by the time she leaves that first, not Riley, Sasha Lane's character, Star, by the time she leaves that first house, and she never really evolves past that. And I think that, but, you know, Shia LaBeouf, same basic principle.
I think Sasha realizes that she can make money in different ways, and she can
by
make money
herself.
No, not necessarily. Not every single time is she. Okay, that is very reductive. But what I think she does is she takes Shia LaBeouf's notion of, okay, I'm supposed to sell magazine subscriptions, but I'm actually supposed to sell myself. And I think she does that. She sells her. All right, Brian, I fucking understand that you have issues with her prostituting herself at the end of the film. Let's move on. Okay. I think she is selling herself. She is selling her personality. She is selling her willingness to just kind of go with the flow. She constantly puts herself in these kind of dangerous positions, and the film doesn't exactly give that kind of reality, but there are situations where people find themselves in that don't end up fucked up and you know, messed up beyond measure. So, you know, and there's even a warning at times in the film. They talk to her about how, you know, some guys abducted this girl and killed her and then raped her and then buried her in a parking lot. You know, so there are these kind of real life scenarios and things like that. But I love that she kind of throws to the wind this kind of rule that she's supposed to sell magazine subscriptions and she's supposed to only do it at a certain level. Like, she's not supposed to get in cabs with these people. She's not supposed to. And she's like, well, I'm not any good at selling in that style. Let me sell these magazines. Let me sell kind of this lifestyle in a different way. And she's still making money and she's still doing work. And she just found a different avenue to kind of explore that. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Michael Snydell, anything to add?
No, I don't know. I think Bill actually feels stronger about this movie than me, which I was not expecting. Yeah, I don't know. I think there is a lot of interesting things to be said about Star's character in the sense of that she, I do kind of think she is a little bit thinner than the other characters because she is kind of our way in, and her qualities are very much based on, you know, going from that first scene where she, you know, does her first ride along with Shia LaBeouf's character. She is rebellion, or she is like, she is trying to immediately rebel towards the system that is in place and trying to immediately question, you know, wait, why are you doing it this way? And so there is, I like that the film evolves specifically around that. And, you know, almost kind of grinds her down as it goes. But like,
how does it grind her down?
Brian, the end of this movie is not in any way happy.
Right. But I mean, she's still keeping up her, like, I'm not going to lie to sell magazines thing.
Okay. But she is about to be. All right. Maybe I'm getting into spoilers now.
Who cares?
All right, spoilers, guys. But
yeah, let's just say spoilers.
Okay, she's almost kicked out of the group by the end of the movie. So there are – she is legitimately on the rock. She's almost left in
– Did we lose Michael or did Michael just flip out?
I don't know. I don't have the energy to – Are
That's
you
fine.
This?
You're really all right, Michael. We've talked about this film for an hour. I don't think we're going to make any progress with Brian. I think we've said enough about this fucking movie. I mean, honestly, guys, it's nearly 3 hours. It doesn't round the corner as much as some people would like. You know, I do think this film could lop off a good hour, maybe a good 30 minutes, but. Honestly, the way it is, I think Michael, you were absolutely right. People are either gonna enjoy this film and kind of go on this trip with these people, or they're gonna kind of reject it from the outset and you know, an hour in, realize that there's an hour and a half left of this movie and just
an hour and
just
43 minutes.
Sure, you know. So
the aesthetics are in stark opposition to the material. Like, yes. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
The one last thing I do want to say is,
yes,
I do not think that this looks down at its characters. I know you mentioned that, Brian, and I don't expect to convert you, but I do absolutely. The reason why this movie works for me is I don't find it smug. And even the times when it does kind of, poke at the upper class neighborhood where they see a girl or where they go into a rich woman's house who professes to be Catholic.
Birthday party.
Yeah, well, the birthday party.
She's Christian.
All right, fine, Christian. And the girls outside are dancing, which seems like a obvious callback to Fish Tank.
Not only are they dancing, but then the sprinklers come on and they're dancing. And it's like that scene. I hated every fucking second of that scene just because of that, and then also because I was like, this girl can't sell magazines. But yes, go
she
ahead,
was
Michael.
Also stoned. I mean,
no, she wasn't stoned in that scene. She was stoned in the scene that followed.
All right,
yeah.
Damn it.
It's okay.
But I like that. That scene is representative of the whole movie. But that doesn't feel. That doesn't feel smug or condescending to me. Like it's just she presents it as so matter of fact, even though it's heightened and. Vulgar, and that's just like the whole movie. So it's I don't know, like I've seen a lot of movies where it seems like it's, you know, turning their nose up at, you know, yokels or, you know, things like that, and I think this movie is what it wants to be. Sorry, I'm going in circles, guys. I'm tired.
Well,
go see it or go don't. I don't know.
You don't even have to go see it. You can rent it right now from the comfort of your own home. And that way you can pause it to see how much goddamn time you have left with these shitty people. So I'll say, to wrap up my thoughts, I think this movie is super disingenuous in the way it presents its material, both aesthetically and narratively. I think that it does a disservice to the story that it's trying to tell, and it does not create particularly compelling characters that make its bendings of reality worthwhile or meaningful. So, all in all, this movie is offensive on a number of levels, and it wasted a lot of my time, and I'm super unhappy that we had to watch it. Which is crazy, because I wanted to see this when it came out, and I didn't realize how strongly I would hate it. I was happy that it was voted for, because I was super excited to see it. But now that I've actually seen it, I guess be careful what you wish for is what I'm saying. So that's the end of our conversation about American Honey. For anyone who's curious, we don't know yet when we're going to be doing Tyler Perry's Boo, a Madea Halloween, which was the other thing that you assholes voted on us to watch.
Probably with Get Out, maybe. That would make a good...
That's a good double.
But it is guaranteed that Brian will like Boo more than American Honey.
I won't say that, but it would be hard for... I thought, going into this episode, I just thought, this is not a good movie, it's not for me. And then when I heard positive things being said about the world that it portrayed, I apparently just lost my mind. So... For a while there, I went into a vicious fugue state, and I apologize. For anyone who is interested in learning about the reality of these magazine crews, it was an Atlantic article titled Trapped into Selling Magazines Door-to-Door, subtitled Traveling Crews Have Been Exploiting Young Workers and Scamming Customers for Decades, and Neither Law Enforcement nor Congress Has Been Able to Do Anything About It. And it talks all about the way that these people... are lied to and exploited and oftentimes killed while doing this horrible, horrible job that apparently seems really fun. So
that's not what we ever said. Come on,
move on.
Jesus Christ.
American Honey, not a fucking documentary.
No.
And also not presented as fun.
Okay. Let's all move right, on. Well, so
all right.
Wrapping up for today. Follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Follow us on Facebook. Search for The Film Stage Show. Don't forget iTunes. And we are brought to you, of course, by Mubi. Mubi.com/Film Stage Show gets you 30 days free of one of the best streaming movie sites online. Again, Mubi has curators so that they're not just buying up a catalog and shoving it down your gullet, treating you like a goose about to be served up as foie gras. Instead, Mubi actually selects... That's my food metaphor for today. Mubi instead selects a single film to premiere each day that you then have 30 days to watch, so they constantly have a rotating selection of great films for you. Again, that's MUBI.com/filmstage for a free 30-day trial. Gentlemen, let us tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and the next time we're shouting in their ear holes. Bill Graham.
You can find me definitely never reading another magazine at CableBFG on Twitter.
But Bill,
you can also find me writing
about boats. We got magazines about cows.
No. I'm just interested about the trailers. Yeah. Anyways, moving on. You can also find me writing for The Film Stage and also FreshFiction.tv.
All right, Michael Snydell.
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, where I sometimes say snappy things, but not right now, apparently. And you know what? I actually wrote about this movie back in October of last year at Roger Ebert. I wrote about this in relation to Hell or High Water. I would suggest that Brian doesn't read it because he might have a hernia, which how much he disagrees with it. But if you want to read that, that's up at Roger Ebert.
I'm just glad that I wasn't the only person who thought about this movie in conjunction with Hell or High Water in terms of UK directors directing stuff about the heartland. So I'm glad to hear that. You can find me, as always, on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, and you can read our work at thefilmstage.com. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to speaking to you next week.
Yes, Brian, why can't we be friends?
Because you're wrong about this movie, God damn it.